CB, Susan Lewis King and Austin King versus Ken Paxton and City of Abilene. Mr. Fisher, whenever you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Ross Fisher and I'm here on behalf of Susan and Austin King. This is a Public Information Act case that deals with the right of a private law-abiding Texan to protect the contents of a mental health evaluation that was conducted in the privacy of her own home when the government fails to protect that information. This right is consistent with the Supreme Court's ruling in Boeing v. Paxton, holding that where a provision does not on its face limit an exception to the government, a private party may assert that exception to protect its own privacy interests. And that's our request of the court today. In October 2015, at the request of a concerned family member, the Abilene Police Department and local MHMR personnel facilitated a mental health evaluation at the private residence of Austin and Susan King. There was no investigation of a crime, and the evaluation ended with Mrs. King voluntarily seeking treatment. The resulting records deal only with Mrs. King's mental health status, her private family affairs on what was the worst night of her life. The documents generated by this evaluation are one narrative compiled by officers of the Abilene Police Department and three recordings. The recordings include both audio and video footage. The Attorney General and the trial court allowed for limited redactions, but this piecemeal approach to privacy fails to protect the rights of Mr. and Mrs. King. Government Code 552-108B2 accepts from disclosure records that are held by a law enforcement agency if those records are unrelated to an incident that did not result, if they're related only to an incident that did not result in conviction or deferred adjudication. We refer to that as the guiltless conduct exception in our briefs. These records at issue were not related to the investigation of a crime and did not lead to a conviction and did not lead to a deferred adjudication. Therefore, they detail only the guiltless conduct of Mrs. King on the night in question. Under Boeing, a third party is entitled to assert that exception to protect those rights. In fact, Section 552.326 of the Government Code only limits the arguments that a governmental body can raise in a subsequent PIA lawsuit. There's no limitation on the exceptions that can be raised by an affected third party in a subsequent PIA lawsuit. When members of the media sought to publicize the documents reflecting this night of crisis, the City of Abilene failed to raise the guiltless conduct exception, and they also failed to raise the relevant health and safety code exception that governs communications made during the course of a mental health evaluation. These failures by the City of Abilene should not be fatal to the King's case. As the Supreme Court recognized in Boeing, a city cannot waive the rights of the Kings. They can only waive the city's rights in certain information, but can simply defer to the Kings the decision to protect their own interests.
Is this the strongest argument you have? And I'm not meaning to discredit but is this your the best issue that you think that the Kings have? I mean, what about the common law?
You may address that. I think that there's equally strong issues. I think that the new body camera law is equally strong, and I think that the trial court and the Attorney General narrowly applied the common law privacy interests. I'm happy to address either one of those.
Okay, so let's start with, and I will tell y'all, we just got the evidence yesterday. I don't know why, but I have not. I don't know if the rest of the panel members have been able to review the evidence, so I don't exactly understand the trial court, why it kept some things out and some things not. So let's talk about my understanding from the briefs is that the trial court believed that the body cam exception, the occupational code, I guess section 1701.651 and 661F, applied to this type of, even though it's not a new body cam. However, in her letter ruling, in the court's letter ruling, not everything on the audio tape is protected or is required not to be released. Can you give me a little insight? And I don't ask that lightly for lawyers to give me insights as to what trial judges do or don't do, but how does that all merge together?
I wish I could give you insight as to why the trial court applied the occupations code to only limited portions. I don't know the answer to that.
Can you tell me, once again, I haven't seen the evidence,
sure.
I apologize. Can you tell me, is all of the audio in the house of your client?
Most of it is in the, so there, it's utilizing a two-part recording system, a dash camera, and one of those dash cameras is pointed at the front door of the residence and can see into the residence and onto the front porch of the private residence. And that's a private place under the occupations code. The other two are just sort of pointed off into the night sky.
So can you agree that as to the two that are not pointed into the house, that those would not violate any kind of privacy, just as to the video portion?
The video portion, I would agree to that.
Okay.
And then they all contain audio portion that was made at the King's private residence.
Okay, so all of the audio is...
All of the audio.
Okay.
We are in... So under the statute, which it was went into effect September 1st of 2015, this incident happened about 6 weeks later. Under the new statute, what it says is if these constitute a body-worn recording device, which we think the plain language of the statute captures at least the part that's captured by the body-worn recording device, right? Because it says if it's worn on an officer's person and can capture audio or video.
Or, which right. is a significant right. word.
Or video.
And so I agree that. I'm just trying to understand if the court, and obviously the state is arguing that it does not, that we should somehow, the law, the meaning, the words of the law should not capture something that was
right.
in existence before what we all seem to think are body cameras. And I don't mean to simplify the state's argument. I understand they have an argument about cameras and therefore can't be a camera if, there's not a camera attached. But we have no idea. I mean, the trial court did find that it applied to the audio parts.
Correct.
Just some of them.
Portions of the audio recording.
Okay.
And what the statute says is that if a recording is captured on a body-worn recording device, a law enforcement agency cannot release any portion of that recording. We think that means video as well, but we certainly feel confident saying that means all of the audio. So I don't know why the trial court applied it so narrowly, but by applying it, then the trial court was obligated to withhold, we think, everything, but at a minimum, the audio recording.
Well, it might possibly be because of the word camera, which is usually used to...
Agreed, but the camera, the definition of camera is a recording device that is capable of recording or transmitting to be recorded remotely, video or audio.
Right.
So we believe that it captures that.
Could you address the constitutional and common law privacy issues?
We believe that those were applied too narrowly. The industrial foundation test, as you know, has two prongs, which does it reflect highly intimate and embarrassing personal matters, and is it of any legitimate use to the public? And we believe that those were applied too narrowly, that this entire episode was, let me address it this way. The limited redactions that the Attorney General authorized and then the somewhat more expansive redactions that the trial court authorized don't protect the King's constitutional or common law privacy interests because it's this piecemeal protection. And anybody reading those redacted reports or listening to those redacted audio would know exactly what happened on the night in question. They will see exactly what crisis Mrs. King was dealing with, and all the issues, family issues, marital issues, mental health issues, would all be out there. And so this piecemeal limited redaction doesn't do anything to protect the King's constitutional or common law privacy rights. And we believe that the only way to do that is to withhold the entirety of this episode.
So why doesn't the involvement of law enforcement transform this from a private matter? I mean, there's, I guess, what I consider the balancing test from embarrassing, intimate versus does the public have a right to know? And do people not have a right to know what their tax money, you know, their officers, when they are doing a welfare check, what's happening?
Well, this was. I think it's key that you said this was a welfare check, and this was a mental health evaluation from the outset. The police department dispatched an MHMR caseworker before they even made the scene.
I don't think anybody's arguing that this was a criminal investigation in any way, shape, or form.
Well, I think that to answer your question, the PIA says that if there's information that a law enforcement agency holds that does not relate to a criminal investigation and doesn't relate to conduct that resulted in a conviction or deferred adjudication, it's accepted from disclosure. And we're just saying we ought to be able to assert that exception when the city failed to do so.
And I'm going to ask you, maybe this is the last question this time around. So going back to 552-108. I'm having a hard time understanding the difference between A and B, because I understand your argument that this is not a detection, investigation, or prosecution of a crime. So obviously A does not apply.
Right.
But under B, how do we get from relating to law enforcement or prosecution to apply to this case before we even get to number two? And whether, you know, that's a discretionary right of the law enforcement agency, is whether they want to give it or not. How do we get past the law enforcement or prosecution?
Well, I think that it relates to under B2, it's an internal record or notation that relates to law enforcement only in relation to an investigation that did not result in conviction or deferred adjudication. Here it relates to law enforcement in that it was made by the Abilene Police Department, but it's an investigation into someone's welfare and mental health.
So you believe
it? Well,
go ahead.
No,
I don't think that the city of Abilene has an interest in this information.
So does matters relating to law enforcement or prosecution, do you believe that this is a catch-all for anything else that a police department does?
Yes.
Whether it's a welfare check, whether it's a internal affairs investigation, whether it's a personnel matter, whether it's, you know, getting a cat from the tree?
I do. I think that this covers non-criminal related activity by a law enforcement agency.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May please the court. I'd like to start by briefly talking about the actual record itself, the record of the information. Because as the court said, it was just received and you haven't had a chance to view it yet.
And can I ask you a question? Was
sure.
There a reporter at the hearing? Do we have, because we don't have a record from a reporter either.
It was a summary judgment hearing, so there's no reporter's record.
Thank you.
The record that is available for the court's review is unredacted, but that's not actually what's before the court today. What is before the court is a redacted version of this law enforcement record, and that's because when the Attorney General issued his open records ruling, we identified numerous portions of, and we'll say, the video. There are three videos, but there's two of them capture mostly the same thing, and really one is the main video. Numerous portions of that for redaction. The trial court then reviewed all these videos again and identified additional parts. And except for the trial court's finding under the body camera statute, we do not contest any of the other additional redactions found by the trial court. So none of that information is before the court today. So the video has to be viewed in light of those redactions. And my office has created a copy of the main video that, with all of the undisputed redactions already made. If the court would like for us to submit that after the hearing, we can do that.
That would be helpful. Obviously, you know, if you will let the other side to make sure that we all agree that that is the, if I'm understanding you correctly, this is what it would look like if we leave the trial court's decision intact, except for the body cam.
Correct.
Okay.
And the body camera part.
If y'all agree to that, because that's not something that the trial court had before it, correct?
The trial court did not have it, and appellants very well may not agree to it, but it's available for the court's review.
Do you agree to that? And you might not want to. I'm sorry.
I think we should let them figure that out, and they'll let us know, right? You will let us know?
Thank
yes.
you. Sorry.
So I'll go ahead and start. I'll talk about the body camera statute first. The question was asked of why the trial court identified these two portions of the video for redaction. And though we disagree that the exception applies at all, I will tell you why. Those two portions were identified by the trial court because those are the two times during the video where the officer whose audio is being recorded has stepped inside of the house. At all other times, the officer with the audio who is capturing the audio is outside of the house. The recordings from the cameras are made from the street, they're made from the vehicles. And the majority of this incident takes place outside of the home.
So the only portions that were being redacted by the trial court are those portions from when the officer stepped inside?
Correct. Then
otherwise,
when the officer steps back
otherwise
outside?
Otherwise, they were outside.
Yes.
Okay.
So let me start with the meaning of the term body-worn camera. And the Kings referred...
Can we back up before we get there?
Sure.
We've had the broad statement that as long as it's law enforcement, go ahead. Never mind.
Well, do you want to start with the law enforcement
exception? I can start with...
I understand that you're just arguing the body camera, but...
They are not. They are arguing the entirety...
Correct.
...of the... I would call it the law enforcement exception. I think he's got another phrase for it, but...
I can start with the law enforcement exception.
Do that, please.
Let me just quote first from the King's brief. They claim that no appellate court has denied an affected third party its right to assert the guiltless conduct exception. First of all, no court has ever identified a guiltless conduct exception. Secondly, no court has ever recognized a private party's right to assert the law enforcement exception. There is no case law that.
What about Carrollton versus Paxton? Does that, are you familiar with that one?
Yes, okay. I argued that case.
Okay.
Yeah.
Does that implicate what we're doing here today?
Only in the sense that in that case, we had the city of Carrollton was asserting the law enforcement exception. And in fact, the ultimate outcome of this court's decision was that the city was allowed to withhold
the basic information.
Yes, and a record and a law enforcement record under this provision over the request of the actual subject of the record who wanted to obtain it.
What about the language in it that says that there can be no basic information, and I'm going to quote, subject to disclosure under that provision unless there has been an arrest or a crime?
And
there was neither an arrest nor was there a crime, correct?
Absolutely. But we don't even have to talk about basic information here because the main difference between this situation and Carrollton is that the city in this case did not assert the law enforcement exception. They had the discretion to, they chose not to.
And a third party is not entitled to it at all?
A third party is not entitled to it, and the reason for that is because the law enforcement exception protects law enforcement interests.
But how do we bring Boeing in? Because first of all, if my understanding of the Carrollton, they were looking at 552.108B1. There was no question about B2. Is that correct?
In the city of Carrollton case?
Correct.
I believe it was B2 or A2. It might have been A2, which it was a criminal investigation that did not result in a conviction.
Okay, so A2. Okay, so what do we do with Boeing? you know, that states that a third party can bring. I understand it's not dealing with the law enforcement exception, but it's dealing with 104, a different exception.
Well, let me make 2 points on Boeing.
Okay.
First of all, in Boeing, the information at issue was Boeing's information. It was a lease that, according to the record in that case, Boeing had spent a significant amount of time creating to enter into with it, with the governmental body who held the lease, and it contained Boeing's both its financial information and its other information that, if released, the court found, if released, would be able to, would help its competitors. This information is not the King's information. This information is the Abilene Police Department's information. It is information that was gathered by their police officers on a call for service, and the Kings have no right to this information, or, you know, it is information that belongs to the city.
Don't they have a right to prevent the city from disclosing if it is personal privacy interest rights? Do they not have a right to prevent that from being released?
Say, for example, their address.
They absolutely have the right to argue
and
on behalf.
And continue her question first. Mine's the secondary.
Sorry. Yeah. They're shooting at you from two sides.
Yes, they do have the right to assert their own privacy interests before the release of any law enforcement record. But we've done that. We've looked at privacy, and the main point here is that the law enforcement exception does not protect privacy interests. The word privacy does not appear anywhere within the statute. The legislature is capable of using the word privacy when it means for a statute to protect privacy. Now, the King's site.
Well, what about 552.305, which specifically deals about privacy interests in all of these? It's the one I think that Boeing relied on.
Yes,
it specifically names 104, but it says including these four. Does it mean just these? So how can you argue that there's no requirement in 108 that would deal with privacy interests?
Well, 552.305 certainly lends more support to Boeing's argument because the exception is listed right there. The wording also of, this is one section of an entire provision that is clearly intended to protect the government's interest in its own law enforcement aims. Let me talk, because the King cite to FOIA several times, so let me talk about FOIA. I think it's pretty well established that the Public Information Act of Texas was based upon the Federal Freedom of Information Act. But the law enforcement exceptions of the two statutes differ greatly, and the main point is that FOIA contains an express provision that is intended to protect against an individual's privacy. The Texas legislature did not adopt any such similar language when it enacted the law enforcement exception. And just briefly, the consequences that would result from adopting the King's view. This would mean that of any law enforcement investigation that has been closed without a conviction, so closed because insufficient evidence, closed because a witness refuses to come forward. For any of those reasons, if that is the status of the investigation, any individual who is involved or is named in the investigation or is part of the investigation could, on their own power, prevent the government from releasing any information that it chooses to release about that investigation. There's never been a finding that a member of the public has any interest in asserting any of the provisions of the law enforcement exception, because it would defeat the purpose of the exception, which is to aid the government in its law enforcement aims.
Well, can you tell me, why do you consider there's a difference between A and B in 552.108? And are you saying that there's just no, even if we were to tailor it to privacy interest only, that a person who police investigate somebody for, and I guess it's the same in A or B, for a crime, and conduct an investigation does not turn out in a conviction or a deferred adjudication, that if it's I'm the subject, I have no right whatsoever to claim, don't go give that information to the Statesman and print it on the first page?
Well, you may have the right to assert, as I stated before, your privacy interests in that information. And there may be another provision of the criminal code that allows someone to go through a process to have certain records expunged if they have been through a criminal trial and not been found guilty, but that's not the case with this exception. And speaking, we've talked about privacy a lot, but you know, turning to privacy, the doctrine of common law privacy has already been applied to this information. Mr. Fisher described it as narrowly applied. That's how we're supposed to apply exceptions to disclosure under the PIA. They are supposed to be applied narrowly. Common law privacy protects highly intimate or embarrassing facts about a person's private affairs when they are not of legitimate interest to the public. This incident was not an example of private behavior. It was a interaction with peace officers who were responding to a call for service. Interactions with police can admittedly often be stressful, sometimes be embarrassing, but the Kings have cited to no case law which finds that on that basis alone, common law privacy serves to completely envelop the entirety of a law enforcement action. That would pretty much allow the exception to swallow the rule that the disclosure of government investigations, especially completed investigations, is preferred under the PIA. Furthermore, even if the court were to get to the point of finding that this information is highly intimate or embarrassing facts about a person's private affairs, there is a legitimate interest here. The public has an interest in the activities of police, how the police do their jobs, how the police interact with members of the public, and particularly how the police interact with a member of the public who is a public official. There's also a lot said about mental health. The fact of the matter is that we would not be talking about mental health here today but for the references to mental health in the King's briefing to this court. Every reference, specific reference to mental health treatment, a doctor, to the extent those exist in this record, they have already been identified for redaction by the Attorney General, by the trial court, as information protected by common law privacy. I believe the trial court also additionally found that the health and safety code provision applies. We're not here today challenging that, so that provision is also removed. To find that this provision protects communications between a patient and a person that the patient reasonably believes is a mental health professional, it is not reasonable, it would not be reasonable for Representative King to have believed that every licensed or every uniformed officer at the scene of this call for service was a licensed mental health professional. And you can tell by the context of the video that, in fact, these are individuals who are not strangers to each other. And the city agrees in its briefing to the court that it would not be reasonable for Representative King to have identified these individuals as mental health professionals. They were police officers. There's a conversation, this is referenced in the briefing from the Kings, with an individual who is not a uniformed police officer. None of that is before the court today because that has already been identified for redaction. I can return to the body camera statute briefly. I want to bring a Supreme Court case to the court's attention, and I did not cite this in our brief. It's In re Ford Motor Company, 442 Southwest 3rd, 265. I'm quoting here. When seeking to understand statutory definitions, the word being defined is the most significant element of the definition's context. The court further states, we presume that a definition of a common word accords with and does not conflict with the ordinary meaning unless the language clearly indicates otherwise. This case is dealing with a statutory definition that is included as part of a provision. The Kings are asking the court to ignore the word camera in the term body-worn camera. I believe opposing counsel referred to it as a body-worn recording device. The statute is body-worn camera. Not only does a microphone not fit any understood common understanding of the word camera, the context that it appears in is important because meanings of these terms cannot be determined in isolation. They have to be drawn from the context. The context here is that this term is part of a entirely new statutory scheme implementing the body-worn camera program. The subchapter is entitled body-worn camera program. It's 13 statutes that include a provision requiring the governor's office to develop a grant program for law enforcement agencies to apply for, to receive money to adopt the new body-worn camera program. It requires the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement to compile a report of the cost of implementing this new program and report that annually to the legislature. Before any body-worn camera can be used by a police department, that department must adopt a new training program and train every officer that would be wearing a body-worn camera and every personnel that would come in contact with the recording. I would submit that the legislature did not intend for all of these provisions, which would have result in a great cost to a police department, to apply to technology that almost every police department in the state has been using for many years. The fact that the legislature defined the term body-worn camera at all, when I believe that any department that is applying for this grant, police departments generally, the companies that are providing these devices, everyone understands what a body-worn camera is, I would suggest, is to show that all of the provisions of the statute that apply to a body-worn camera recording apply to that recording regardless of if it's only an audio track, only the video track. It does not require both audio and video to have been captured by the body-worn camera for it to be subject to the heightened restrictions that are placed by this statutory scheme. But I think the court would have to just completely ignore the word camera or presume that the legislature intended to vastly depart from the general understanding of the word camera in order to find that a microphone is a camera.
Why do you think the statute says audio or video?
I don't think that it means a device that captures audio and video doesn't qualify. So I believe that the term was used in this way to refer to audio captured by a body-worn camera is still subject to the heightened restrictions, even if there is no video to accompany that audio.
Aren't we supposed to give the plain meaning of the words in the statute effect when they say audio or video?
I think going back to the or.
Right.
I would suggest that the legislature didn't use the word and in order to avoid a situation where it's either one or the other that has been captured by the camera. But while I understand Your Honor's question of taking audio and video by their plain meaning, I think the word camera also needs to be taken by its plain meaning.
And we can do both, can't we?
If the court would like to find that the legislature intended for this provision referring to a body-worn camera device to also refer to every older device that these officers have been using for many years. And my time has expired, so if there's no other questions, I'll conclude.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. If I may pick up with this discussion of the body-worn camera, this reference to these other statutory changes of the statutory scheme and these ancillary administrative changes about grant funding and training, they don't do anything to change the plain meaning of the statute. And the plain meaning of the plain language of the statute is capable of recording or transmitting to be recorded remotely, video or audio, and worn on an officer's person. There's three different things that fall within that category. There's something that records audio, there's something that records video, or there's something that records both audio and video. And here we have, I know they're what the AG's office refers to as a dash camera, but they fall within this new statutory exception. And for the most part, what dash cameras do, they're going to capture things that are on public property on the side of a roadway. But in this instance, they fall within the definition of the occupations code, and they captured video and audio on a private place. And the way that the statute defines the new occupations code body camera law defines a private space as a location in which a person has a reasonable expectation of privacy, including a person's home.
But what about the argument that the trial court has already accommodated for that private space by redacting those portions that were when the officer stepped inside but then didn't when he was outside, or
even
the
if
officer was not?
Even if you acknowledge that the trial court accommodated that, you still have to go to subsection 1701661F, which says a law enforcement agency may not release any portion of a recording made in a private space. And it doesn't say by body cam, it just says any portion of a recording made in a private space, and goes on to say without the written consent of the person who's the subject of that recording. So even if the court made those accommodations, that's step one. Step two is, under this statute, to bar the police department from releasing any portion of that recording.
Inside the home, is that not what the trial
court did? It says any portion of the recording.
So you're saying if the recording is, let's say the recording is not on the porch. Let's say that it's outside on the street where there's no expectation of privacy whatsoever.
Right.
And the officer is speaking to somebody and they follow him into the home legally. Mm-hmm. Are you saying then that the whole recording, including what was outside and had no expectation of a privacy rights, that would be also not released?
I think that's a defensible position, but that's not really even relevant in ours, because in ours, all this took place, the part that took place, none of this took place in the street. It took place on her front porch, and her front porch is on her private home, which is set back from the street. So you've got a private lot. At the back of that private lot is a private home. On the front of that home is a front porch. That's where this interaction occurred, and then it moved inside her house. So everything that we're talking about took place at a private place. None of it took place in a public space. It all took place on private property, and all within the confines, either inside her home or on the front porch, within the front, the threshold of her private home.
And I thought that
in the context of the Fourth Amendment, do we have a reasonable expectation of privacy on our porch?
I think that under this statute gives you one. Okay. With regard to the health and safety code, I want to clarify that we'll talk about the health and safety code. It is perfectly reasonable for Mrs. King to think, we're not saying that those police officers are mental health professionals, but we are saying that it was perfectly reasonable to think that they, for her to think that they were there to conduct a mental health evaluation. And under Chapter 611 of the Health and Safety Code, if she reasonably believes that she is talking to someone whose sole job is to evaluate her mental health, those communications are confidential. And if you listen to the recordings, you will hear, I mean, and this whole thing started as a mental health check, but you'll hear the officers say things to Mrs. King like, we're just worried about you. You'll hear "We're here to only help you." You'll hear them say, "They're worried about you and your well-being." There is no mention of a crime, no mention of an investigation, and all these statements about wanting to check on her mental welfare.
And back to kind of an analogous question, hasn't this information already been accounted for by the trial court's
no.
decision to redact this information?
No, they only redacted her statements to the MHMR professional. They did not redact any of her statements regarding her mental health state to the police officers who were inquiring only about her mental health.
But how do you get over, I understand your argument of what might have been reasonable for her to expect, but the statute doesn't say anything about, you know, the expectation if it's given to, you know, to anybody. It says communications between a patient and a professional. And then it goes to who a professional is.
Mm-hmm.
A person is the patient, reasonably believed, is authorized, licensed, or certified as provided by the subsection, which would be practice medicine, certified to diagnose, evaluate, or treatment. How can her thinking reasonably or unreasonably that the police were somehow there, you know, they can practice medicine, they're not licensed or certified by the state to diagnose. It's your argument that just because she...
They told her that's why they were there.
That they were there to diagnose, evaluate, or treat?
To evaluate her. Two last things I'd like to touch on. One is the mention of when we talked about Boeing and 552.305, we believe that that is broad enough to allow a private third party to assert any exception. And we believe that we recognize that Boeing addressed a different exception, but it also recognized repeatedly that the PIA is broadly encourages an affected third party to challenge the release of information or to assert their rights. Finally, the Attorney General worries, I think, that by allowing the Kings to assert 108B2, that this will somehow lead to a proliferation of people trying to prevent disclosure of information that relates to guiltless conduct. And I think this is what opposing counsel said was what happens if there's insufficient evidence and they never proceed with a case and then someone wants to protect that. I guess two things. One is a practical issue, which is it's unlikely that that's going to happen. We've sort of got the perfect storm here, which is you have someone who knew about multiple Public Information Act requests, who had time to do something about it and had the resources and wherewithal to do it. And I don't think that's likely to be a problem, practically speaking.
But don't you think that the logical conclusion, if we find that a third party has the right to claim the exception, law enforcement, that then there's going to be a requirement to say, well, how am I going to claim my right if I don't even know? I know y'all aren't arguing for it.
We're not arguing for it. We don't think that the PD has an obligation to notify any third party, and which is why we think it's even more important that a third party be allowed to assert their rights and to raise any exception because they may find out about it and they ought to be allowed to do that. And that's sort of my philosophical answer is, so what if people want to assert their privacy rights in records held by law enforcement that did not lead to charges or to conviction? They ought to be able to do that. I don't think it's going to be a proliferation of people filing PIA, but they ought to be able to use every tool in the PIA to protect their privacy rights.
Do you agree then that the limitation is to privacy, privacy interest? So one of the arguments against a third party being able to claim the law enforcement exception under whether it's B2 or A2 is that then, you know, you can, whether it's private or not, if you have the right to claim it, then you can claim it. Or are you arguing that the court should just limit it to anything that might be a violation of your privacy rights?
I think the legislature has allowed a third party to assert 108B2 any contents that
regardless of their own individual privacy
interests. I think it would be strengthened if they, obviously, I don't think that a third party could
not,
come.
It's not there.
I think
mean,
it has to.
That,
I'm sorry.
The law enforcement exception does not specifically protect privacy interests. Those words aren't there in it.
I agree with that.
Okay.
I think that it would be their own interest. I don't think I could go prevent disclosure of someone else's information. I think that you'd only be limited to preventing disclosure of information that affected you.
But you otherwise, think you can prevent any, whether it violates privacy interest or not?
I don't think that it's limited to common law or constitutional privacy interest. I think the very fact that you might have been investigated for a crime and exonerated is the kind of thing that might not trigger industrial foundation, but you ought to have the right to protect that.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The cause will be submitted.